It's interesting, you know, to think that I've done over 331 high schools in 22 different states, and for the most part, I could not stand public schools. Why, you might ask? Because I knew that what was being taught day after day wasn't always the truth, and boy, was I right. 5 days a week being delivered over to the school system to be raised up by complete strangers? How does that work? Well, when you're raised up without a father, your mother's always with her boyfriends, you're on welfare and have no one to come home to, you're misunderstood and not only insecure but as lost as could be, I can see now that I was a perfect target for what they wanted to teach me. But still, I had to ask the question, why would I be the one to do high schools across this country? My whole life always trying to find my purpose, who could possibly understand? Who could possibly understand?
Here we go. We're in Arkansas right now, Little Rock. And I've never seen this in a school before, so I'm going to let them hear it too, okay? Have a good one.
One thing to note, folks, is that I never got into so much trouble for doing the right thing in all my life. The fight for this generation is my war, and boy, oh boy, are they ever worth it. And now, everything seems to make perfect sense.
Now, before we get started on My War, Part 2, you first have to remember that freedom is not free. Someone had to fight, to bleed, and to die for the freedoms that we now possess as Americans. The oath in which our veterans say before they serve our country goes as follows. I, my name, do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, both foreign and domestic, and that means enemies here at home. And that I will faithfully discharge the duties of the office of which I'm about to enter. So help me God. Again, remember that freedom was not given to do what you want to do. Freedom is given to do what you ought to do. One more important bit of information. Daniel Webster said of the Constitution for which men bled, fought, and died for, he goes on and says, "Hold on, my dear friends, to the Constitution and to the Republic for which it stands. Because miracles do not cluster, and what has happened once in 6,000 years may not happen again. Hold on to the Constitution, for if the American Constitution should fail, there will be anarchy throughout the world."
One day, an old man found a rude boy upon one of his trees stealing apples. And desiring him to come down, the young saucy boy told him plainly that he would not. "Won't you," said the old man, "then I will fetch you down." So he pulled up some grass and he threw it at him. This only made the youngster laugh to think that the old man would try to beat him down from the tree with only grass. The old man then thought to himself, "Well, if neither words nor grass will do, I must use what virtue there is in stones." So the old man pelted the young boy heartily with stones, which, from their pain and sting, soon made the young chap hasten down from the tree and beg the old man's pardon. The moral of the story is if good words and gentle means will not reclaim the disobedient, they must be dealt with in a more severe manner.
What's the moral of the story? If good words and gentle means will not reclaim those that are in the trees of disobedience, then I must pick up the rocks to get them out. Now, what was I taught in the trees of disobedience? Grass was thrown at me with soft words, exchanging truth and absolutes for a false peace. Counseling and rehabilitation, leaving off discipline, telling me that I was sick instead of making bad choices as I was the one breaking the law, then masking the problems by putting me on antidepressants.
For those that didn't know, ADHD has never been proven. Dr. Edward C. Hamlin, founding member of the Royal College of General Practitioners, said ADHD is a fraud intended to justify starting children on a life of drug addiction. You see, we used to chastise or spank our kids because we love them, but nowadays people just put their kids on antidepressants. Within the last couple of years, there was a project initiated in Wisconsin by Natural Ovens to bring healthy food into area schools, claiming it would make an impact on the behavior of their students. Central Alternative High School in Appleton, Wisconsin, went with the program due to the out-of-control behavior in their school. Principal Luann Conan is amazed at the change that she has seen in her school. Each year, principals are required to file a report with the state of Wisconsin detailing the number of students who have dropped out, been expelled, been found using drugs, carrying weapons, or who have committed suicide. Since the start of the program, she reported, the numbers in every category have been zero. But on the other hand, studies have found that antidepressants are linked to suicide, strange behavior, and murder. For example, Kit Kinkle, age 14, killed his parents, went on a shooting spree at his high school in Springfield, Oregon, killing two and injuring 25. He was prescribed Prozac. Jeff Weiss, age 17, from Red Lake, Minnesota, killed 9 people and then himself. He was on Prozac. Eric Harris, age 18, from Columbine High School, shot 12 fellow students and a teacher. He had been taking Luvox. TJ Solomon, a 15-year-old, wounded 6 at Heritage High School in Conyers, Georgia. He was on Ritalin. Chris Pittman, age 12, shot and killed his grandparents at close range and then set their house on fire. He was on Zoloft. Jason Hoffman, at age 18, wounded 2 teachers and 3 students at Granite Hills High School. He was on Effexor and Celexia. Corey Basgard, age 16, took 23 classmates and a teacher hostage at his Washington State High School. He was on Effexor. Elizabeth Bush, age 14, shot at fellow students in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, wounding 1. She was on Prozac. What about Virginia Tech? Cho Sung Hui went on a shooting spree and killed 32 people. He was prescribed Prozac. Bradley Voorhees shot his wife 21 times. I went to visit him in Stillwater, Minnesota, where he now spends his life in prison. He was on Prozac. The list goes on and on and on, folks. The pharmaceutical companies themselves even came to terms with it, because when you see the antidepressant packages, there's a black box warning stating the dangers of antidepressants. Marc-André Gagnon and Joel Lexchin, a longtime researcher of pharmaceutical promotion, performed a study which shows that the United States pharmaceutical industry spent 24.4% of the sales dollar on promotion, versus 13.4% for research and development in 2004. That's almost twice as much money on pushing their drugs on the people than research to make sure it's safe. The following is adverse reactions that have been observed in the pre-marketing evaluation as stated in the packet inserts of antidepressants. Confusion, depersonalization, hostility, hallucinations, manic reactions, suicidal ideation, loss of consciousness, delusions, feeling drunk, alcohol abuse, homicidal ideation. In other words, the pharmaceutical companies who market these drugs know about these adverse reactions before they even push the drug on the market and prescribe them to the masses. Well, what does this tell you? It's about the money.
It's also interesting to note that the doctors get a kickback by putting your kids on antidepressants. Folks, it's time to stand up, get educated, and when you're educated, you'll come up with a conclusion that that's enough. Hypocrisy demonstrated time and time again. You know, do as I say, but don't do what I do. Nothing to shoot for or no standard in which I was to attain. No goals were set before me. America, them that we teach will always rise to the level of expectation. It's been said that the best teachers are often found in the corners. Well, interestingly enough, someone sent this article to me from a small town newspaper. Look what they're beginning to teach in public schools. Number one, earth worship. Number two, evolution. Number three, socialized medicine. Number four, world government. Number five, animal rights. In other words, animals seen as brothers and sisters. Number six, redistribution of American wealth to other nations. Number seven, contraception and reproductive health. Number eight, legal abortions. Number nine, debt forgiveness to third world nations. Number 10, the adoption of the gay rights agenda. Number 11, the elimination of the right to bear arms. And finally, number 12, setting aside massive amounts of private land where no human presence is allowed. GLOBE stands for Global Learning and Observation to Benefit the Environment. Mikhail Gorbachev is the head of an organization called Green Cross International, operating right here in the United States. Gorbachev is working to create world government, and he's helping implement this education scheme. He has also joined partnership with UNESCO, which is the source of much of the anti-American education curriculum, as well as the International Baccalaureate program. This GLOBE program is funded and implemented through the Federal Department of Education, created under Goals 2000, and is now carried over in No Child Left Behind. No Child Left Behind, it should rightly be called No Child Left Unindoctrinated. Bart Simpson, the great underachiever, boy, would he be proud. Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann has some information on No Child Left Behind that I thought was pretty important for you, the American people, to hear.
When you see the federal government bureaucracy take something over, does it usually cost less? No. Is it usually less complicated? No. Is there usually more paperwork? Yes. Does the quality diminish? Almost always. Especially in the area of education. You know, we need to understand the 10th Amendment to our Constitution guarantees that education will be a state function, a local function. It was never meant to be a federal function. When you get the federal government involved in something, you can almost bet your money on it that it will probably get more complicated and be more costly. And when we're talking about something as important and primary to the future of our nation, and that's the quality education of students, we should never in a million years trust that function to the federal government. We should trust that function to our local community.
Yes, America, it's a little bit deeper than that. In order to understand the direction which the National Education Association has been going for many years, one needs to know where this trend started and the purpose behind it. Most Americans have probably never heard of secular humanism, but that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. For nearly three quarters of a century, the American Humanist Association has been influencing education in America. Humanist Manifesto 1, which states the beliefs of the American Humanist Association, was published in 1933 and signed by 34 authors and educators, including John Dewey, often referred to as the father of modern education. It was the declaration of a totally secular religion. In fact, the term religion was employed at that time to describe the movement. The philosophy of the AHA has had a major influence on the NEA. Here's a statement which appeared in The Humanist, official publication of the American Humanist Association. The article entitled "A Religion for a New Age" is written by John Dunphy. The Bible is an incredibly dangerous book. The battle for humankind's future must be waged and won in the public classroom by teachers who correctly perceive their role as the proselytizers of a new faith. The classroom must and will become an arena of conflict between the old and the new. The rotting corpse of Christianity, together with all its adjacent evils and misery, and the new faith of humanism, resplendent with the promise of a world in which the never-realized Christian ideal of love thy neighbor will finally be achieved. The NEA overwhelmingly passed a resolution, B-10, endorsing gay marriage and adoptions in states where they're legal. In other words, they support and promote homosexuality and same-sex marriage. NEA recommended that gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender issues be required content for teacher credentialing. In other words, teachers would be forced to undergo sensitivity training concerning homosexuality before they could be certified to teach. The NEA voted to replace the word tolerance toward homosexuality with acceptance and respect in union places. The National Education Association is saying, in essence, that tolerance of the homosexual lifestyle isn't enough, that homosexuality must be accepted and respected. Andy Limbaugh, a spokesman for the National Education Association, told Cybercast News that leadership of the NEA has no interest in advancing a position on same-sex marriage. Yet, the NEA was signatory on a letter to the United States senators strongly opposing the federal marriage amendment. So when Limbaugh said that the NEA has taken no position, they're simply lying. The NEA opposed the constitutional amendment making marriage legal only between one man and one woman. That is their position, as indicated by signing the letter. The NEA refused to pass an amendment, I-24, designed to protect students against sexual misconduct by their teachers. Yes, I said to protect students against sexual misconduct by teachers. The amendment read, "To protect the rights of all students, the association believes sexual contact between education professionals and minor students is unacceptable." The NEA refused to pass the amendment and referred it back to the resolutions committee. Many feel that the NEA refused to pass the amendment in order to protect teachers who have sex with students. Nice try, guys, but we simply did our homework and found that, guess what? There are those in public schools that are committing sexual crimes against your children. Check out your state on teachercrime.com. One day, a six-year-old girl was sitting in a classroom. The teacher was going to explain evolution to the children. The teacher asked a little boy, "Tommy, do you see the tree outside?" Tommy answered, "Yes." Teacher asked, "Tommy, do you see the grass outside?" Tommy said, "Yes." The teacher said, "Go outside and look up and see if you can see the sky." Tommy said, "Okay." He returned a few minutes later. He said, "Yes, I saw the sky." The teacher asked, "Did you see God?" Tommy answered, "No." The teacher said, "That's my point. We can't see God because he isn't there. He doesn't exist." A little girl spoke up and wanted to ask the boy some questions. The teacher agreed, and the little girl asked the boy,
"Do you see the tree?" Tommy said, "Yes." The little girl asked, "Tommy, do you see the grass outside?" Tommy answered, "Yes," because he was getting tired of answering the same questions. The little girl asked, "Did you see the sky?" Tommy answered, "Yes." The little girl asked, "Tommy, do you see the teacher?" Tommy answered, "Yes." The little girl asked, "Do you see her brain?" And Tommy said, "No." The little girl said, "Then according to what we were taught today in school, she must not have one." Ray Comfort rightly said, "If we know that with all of his genius, man cannot create anything from nothing, how intellectually preposterous is it to actually believe that in the beginning, nothing created everything?" Atheism is off the charts of human foolishness. That's why an atheist has no scientific credibility, because his "nothing created everything" violates the basic laws of science. And might I add, a little common sense.
Why is it that in recent years, American public schools are being indoctrinated with the Muslim religion? Studies have shown over 500 historical errors in public school textbooks, giving an Islamic slant to our youth. As a result, some of our youth are subject to being taught the following: learning to become a Muslim, fasting for Ramadan, learning the five pillars of Islam, memorize verses of the Quran, adopt a Muslim name, and stage a jihad. Jihad, in a nutshell, means war against non-Muslims. How did this happen? Well, the ACLU, the American Muslim Council, and Americans United for Separation of Church and State, and the Clinton administration joined together and made a clause that opened the door to Muslim teaching, while shutting the door on the Christian religion being taught. Hence, you see the courts backing the Muslim agenda when, for example, a school in California is teaching their students a 3-week course, which essentially requires them to become a Muslim for that period of time. By the way, the representative from the American Muslim Council, Abdul Rahman Alamoudi, today sits behind bars. Why? Because he stands accused by the Treasury Department as being one of the top fundraisers of Al-Qaeda in the U.S. Did you also know that there are over 225 Muslim schools in the United States, making the number to be around 50,000 children who are being taught to, and I quote, Brigitte Gabriel with Act for America, to foster an environment of hate, loathing, and resentment towards Western culture, Christians, Jews, Shiites, secular Muslims, and non-Muslims. However, the question that I have for you, America, is this. Why is this happening? In a nation that was founded on Christian principles, whose students were nurtured in a biblical worldview, could it be that Christians became apathetic, went to sleep, and allowed this radical agenda to creep in unnoticed by the public at large?
I feel that as a nation and as a country, we've kind of lost a lot of our morals and values that we stood on in the beginning. And I think that people like Bradley are great to have, because I feel like every American should have that kind of attitude.
This is something called circular reasoning. I did a high school assembly in Faribault, Minnesota. After the assembly program was over with, the superintendent came up to me and said, "Bradley, I see that when you came into our school, you didn't come in to walk around the elephant that's been in the middle of the living room. You came to kick it out." I said, "Well, thank you." But he was right. You know, the word that's buzzing around in schools in America these days is tolerance. Tolerance defines out as indulgent by not preventing, not prohibited, allowing, and not restraining. In other words, do what you want to do. Is it love to watch cars go over the end of the cliff and watch them crash at the bottom to their own destruction, eh? Or is it love to get up in the face of them that don't know the difference to stop the destruction before it takes place, B? I hope you said B. Did you know that God said in 2 Chronicles 19:10, "And what cause soever shall come to you of your brethren between law and commandment, statutes and judgment, You shall even warn them that they trespass not against the Lord. And so wrath come upon you, upon your brethren. He said, this do, and you shall not trespass. Or what of Leviticus 19:17? Thou shalt not hate thy brother in thine heart. Thou shalt in any wise rebuke thy neighbor and not allow sin upon him. And that we're not to despise the Lord's chastisements. Proverbs 3:11 explains, my son, despise not the chastening of the Lord, neither be weary of his correction. For whom the Lord loveth, he correcteth, even as a father the son in whom he delighteth. Because as it says in Proverbs 27:5-6, open rebuke is better than secret love, and faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. 1 Corinthians 13:6, love rejoiceth in the truth. Romans 12:9, let love be without dissimulation, a false cover-up. Abhor that which is evil, cleave to that which is good. 1 Peter 1:22, seeing you have purified your souls and obeying the truth through the Spirit unto unfeigned love of the brethren, a counterfeit love. Romans 13:10, love worketh no ill to his neighbor, therefore love is the fulfilling of the law. Now, because true love serves up the statement, prevention is better than cure, don't forget it. Charles Spurgeon, the Prince of Preachers, rightly said, if you lower the law, the warning signs, you dim the light by which man perceives his own guilt. Now, the danger of taking down the warning signs, the law, the Ten Commandments, is that it turns lawbreakers into sick people. You see, no law, no violation. Crime runs rampant. Then you have something called anarchy, that means lawlessness. John Adams, the second president of the United States, said that we have no government armed with power capable of contending with human passions unbridled by morality and religion. What would you think of me if I said, let's get rid of all of these speed limit signs, stop signs, warning signs, and the such? You would say, Bradley, I think you're crazy for even suggesting such a thing. Okay, or how would hockey, football, baseball, or even boxing go without a referee? There must be rules to every game, and the rules must be enforced. Well, what of the rules of life? Now, as paradox as this might seem, where the laws are enforced, you have a perfect flow of liberty. Some of you out there call doing what you want to do liberty. Robert Winthrop comes to my aid, one of our founding forefathers. He rightly said, if you will not be ruled by a word, you'll be ruled by bayonets. What's interesting about this is that we are seeing in schools across the nation, armed guards, video surveillance, fenced yards, even metal detectors before you can enter onto the school premise. This is the bayonets that our forefathers warned us about if we didn't take heed to the word of God. Have you ever heard that saying, what goes around comes around? If I take a kernel of wheat and sow it into the soil of the ground, what will it reproduce? Wheat, after its own kind. And so it is. If we look behind us, we can clearly see that we are simply reaping what we've sowed. You cannot sow bad seeds into your life and expect good things to come out. It doesn't work that way. It never has, and it never will. Because you reap what you sow. Did you hear the story of the two hunters who went duck hunting 2 weeks before the season opened? They brought with them a brand new truck, a retriever, and a couple of sticks of dynamite. When they got out to the lake, they noticed that they had a problem. It was completely frozen over. One of them had a good idea. He would go back to his brand new truck, grab a stick of dynamite, go back to the lake and throw it as far as he could into the center of it. Blow a hole in the lake so that they could put down the decoys, the false ducks. And as all the ducks descended, they would have a heyday shooting at them. So this is what they did. As he threw the dynamite, his retriever ran to fetch it. As faithful as that little dog was, he grabbed the stick of dynamite, put it into his mouth, and began running to his owner. The owner freaked out. In fear of his own life, he ran to his truck, grabbed his shotgun, and began shooting at the retriever. The little retriever was scared away and ran under the brand new truck. Guess what blew up, folks? You got it.
the brand new truck along with this faithful little retriever. You see, the very evidence of their guilt blew up right in front of their faces. The men were charged for breaking the law.
I went through the school of hard knocks because no one ever told me that that stick of dynamite was going to come back and blow up in my face. So I planted the seeds of trying alcohol and the party life. I raised up the crops of two DWIs and I went to treatment two different times. I planted the seeds of trying drugs. I raised up the crops of ODing six times, being rushed to the hospital by an ambulance all six times, going to Hollywood, California, taking 14 lines of I then ended up in Cedars-Sinai Hospital for 8 hours while a nurse held my hand. I was scared to death, saying, God, just give me one more chance. He did. I planted the seeds of rebellion and anger, and then I raised up the crops of getting stabbed in the head in St. Paul, Minnesota after a fight. I then received 6 stitches in my head. I can still remember that blood running down my face. 2 times a gun stuck to my head and chest. The head aim was a cop as he said, stop, or else I'll blow your blankety blank head off. I remember getting my nose broken twice and going to jail several times because of fighting. And why not? I was only acting out that which I was subjected to.
God is not mocked. Be not deceived, God is not mocked, for whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption, but he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. It's been said that Mussolini raised his hand towards heaven and said, God, if you're there, then strike me dead. Well, God did accommodate years later. But some might say, I just don't believe it. Well, then let's take a look at history and see if this law is true. Maxentine built a false bridge to drown Constantine, but he himself was drowned. Bajazet was carried about by Tamerlane in an iron cage, which he intended for Tamerlane. Maximinus put out the eyes of thousands of Christians. Soon after, a fearful disease of the eyes broke out, of which he himself died in great agony. Valiant caused about 80 Christians to be sent to sea in a ship and were burned alive. He was defeated by the Goths and fled to a cottage, where he himself was burned alive. Alexander VI was poisoned by wine he had prepared for another. Henry III of France was stabbed in the same chamber where he had helped to contrive the cruel massacre of French Protestants. Marie Antoinette, riding to Notre Dame Cathedral for her bridal, bade the soldiers command all beggars, cripples, and ragged people to leave the line of the procession. She could not endure the sight of these miserable ones. Soon after, bound in the executioner's cart, she was riding toward the place of execution amidst crowds who gazed on her with hearts as cold as ice and as hard as granite. When Follen was asked how the starving populace was to live, he said, "Let them eat grass." Afterward, the mob, maddened with rage, caught him in the streets of Paris, hung him, stuck his head upon a pike, and filled his mouth with grass. What of Voltaire? At 17, he stood in a crowded auditorium and said of Christ's first disciples, "It took 12 ignorant fishermen to build Christianity, but I will show you how one Frenchman can destroy it." If we could destroy the Christian religion, we must first of all destroy man's belief in the Bible. Voltaire boasted that within 100 years of his death, the Bible would disappear from the face of the earth. Voltaire died in 1778, but the Bible lives on. The irony of history is that 50 years after his death, the Geneva Bible Society moved into his former house and used his printing presses to print thousands of Bibles. This is no time to make new enemies, when asked on his deathbed to forswear or renounce the works of darkness. His nurse said, "For all the money in Europe, I wouldn't want to see another unbeliever die."
All night long, Voltaire cried out for forgiveness. Just think, Voltaire spent his whole life fighting against God and his word to only find out that God and his word were always true. What of John the Baptist? Herod Antipas and Herodias were responsible for the imprisonment and execution of John the Baptist, and Herod himself attempted to plot the death of Christ. In the summer of AD 39, Herod's money and territory were turned over to Agrippa. While he and his wife were exiled, and Herod Antipas died miserably. Pontius Pilate handed Christ to the Jews to be scourged and crucified. Pilate fell under misfortunes in the reign of Caligula, was exiled to Gaul, and eventually committed suicide there in Vienna. What of those responsible for rejecting the words of Christ? The Jews of the day, who heard and rejected Christ, were destroyed by Titus and Vespasian, his father. In 70 AD, about 40 years after the Passion of Christ, to the number of 1,100,000, besides those who Vespasian slew in the subduing of Galilee, 17,000 were sold and sent into Egypt and other provinces to vile slavery, and 2,000 were brought with Titus in his triumph, of whom part he gave to be devoured of the wild beasts, part otherwise most cruelly were slain. What about the vain Senate of Rome? After being proposed to have Christ adored as God, they rejected him, being content to have their emperor reign over them rather than the meek King of Glory, the Son of God. They were scourged and trapped for their unjust refusing. For, as they preferred the emperor and rejected Christ, so the just permission of God stirred up their own emperors against them in such sort that the senators themselves were almost destroyed, and the whole city most horribly afflicted for the space of almost 300 years. Once again, God is not mocked. These are the things that you're being taught today. Out on the West Coast, there's a true story told where they have windy roads going up the mountains. On one particular curve, they noticed that cars would go over the cliff and crash at the bottom to their own destruction. Soon, a concerned committee got together and said, "We need to remedy the problem." Instead of simply putting up a caution sign to prevent the destruction before it occurred, they came up with the conclusion to put an ambulance at the bottom of the mountain. You're taught this kind of mentality every day of the week in this country. For example, you see the hottie chicks or the hottie guys on the billboards that say the high life or perhaps the party life. And if you can get close enough to see some of these micro billboard statements, it might say something like this: drink responsibly. Let me ask you a question. If a man goes fishing, he generally catches fish according to what? The bait that he uses. Remember the hottie chick or the hottie guys? Now, a very smart fish doesn't get caught because he knows the trick, doesn't he? He lets the bait go by. Please notice that the only fish that get caught are those that bite onto the hook. We would call that a very uneducated fish, for a nice way of putting it. Again, the only fish that get caught are those that bite onto the hook. But what you're not shown, of course, is the man lying on the bed with 2 to 10 days to live because his liver and kidneys quit working. My mom called me up and said, "Bradley, will you go up and see this man, Dan, who's about to die in 2 to 10 days? I walked up into his room, and the first thing that I noticed was the tear-stricken look on his face while his dad was sitting on the end of his bed. I didn't feel sorry for the man that drank himself into the hospital, but I did feel for his dad who was looking at his dying son and whom he had to bury in 2 to 10 days. I brought this man through the Ten Commandments and prayed that the Lord would heal him upon repentance in Jesus' name. Remember this man because I'll bring him up later on in this documentary." I said to my wife after we had been to this man's hospital room, "Why is it that we don't see billboards like this before destruction takes place?"
At one school in Minnesota before the assembly, I noticed they had a car out in front of the school that looked like a tin can where three kids were killed drinking and driving. And at the same school, I noticed on a wall a poster of a kid who was killed drinking and driving in a body bag with the tow wrap on, of course, so you could identify the body. On this poster, it said, "This year, 7,514 kids will not be drinking and driving." Burnsville, Minnesota, 3,500 kids in this school population, posters plastered everywhere. And on these particular posters, it said, "If you can't party responsibly, then don't party at all." The problem with this mentality is you are, by law, supposed to be 21 years old before you can drink at all. Why the power of suggestion? What do we do in this country? We put an ambulance at the bottom of the mountain and we call it Alcoholics Anonymous. You sit in a circle, you're then told to say your name, to say that you're sick, not responsible, and you need to help me. Did you know that in 1919 to 1933, it was prohibited to manufacture, sell, or import intoxicating liquors in this country of any kind? Remember again what Charles Spurgeon rightly said when he said, "Lower the law, the warning signs, and you dim the light by which man perceives his own guilt." According to Mothers Against Drunk Driving, 11,773 people died in 2008. In 1992, a man in California was busted drinking and driving on 18 different occasions. His sentence given by the judge was to move closer to the liquor store. Now that's funny if you can overlook the 11,773 people that were killed in 2008. Remember, America, that soft judges only produce hardened criminals.
This is where 20-year-old Jackie Saborito wanted to be. She left her family in Venezuela to come to the United States to learn to speak English. Reggie Steffi was a senior in high school. He played baseball and football, and college was in his future. One of his prized possessions was his SUV that he had customized. Early one Sunday morning in the fall of 1999, Jackie's and Reggie's paths crossed. In a split second, their lives would be changed forever. Just a few hours earlier, Jackie had been at a birthday party with some of her new friends. Reggie got together with friends and drank beer after work Saturday evening. Although Texas has a zero tolerance law that makes it illegal for anyone under 21 to buy or possess alcohol, later that night he went to a party and he drank some more. It was late when Jackie and her friends left the birthday party. Neither she nor the driver had been drinking. Jackie rode in the front seat. About the same time, Reggie was also driving home. He was drunk. Reggie's SUV crossed the center line and hit the car Jackie was riding in head on. A fire started in the engine and spread to the inside of the car. Two of Jackie's friends died instantly. Jackie's legs were pinned under the dashboard, trapped. Jackie begged for help, but rescuers could not get her out. Engulfed in flames, she screamed for 45 seconds. Then there was silence. Other than a few bruises, Reggie didn't seem to be hurt. He was taken to a hospital, but he was okay, except for one thing. Blood tests showed that he had been drinking. Police officers arrested him and took him to jail. Jackie was barely alive when she arrived at the hospital. Her hair was gone, so were her nose and her ears. Her eyes were scorched and she was almost completely blind. The fingers on both of her hands had to be amputated. The pain was indescribable and constant. She depends on her father to take care of her. Jackie spent months in the hospital. She fights every day to recover. Since the crash, she has had 50 operations and many more will be necessary. When she can, she goes to school to improve her English.
Reggie Stepi was tried and convicted for causing the deaths of two people while he was driving drunk. He is now in a state penitentiary.
I went from a football field on Friday to a prison cell on Sunday. That quick. Through the choices I made on one Saturday. And so it can happen. I had never been in any trouble before in my life. I had never gotten any DWIs or gotten in trouble with alcohol at all. But the one time that I made that horrible decision, and one time that I got in trouble, one time, it was devastating. And the fact that drinking and driving isn't a joke, it's not something to play around with. It's real, and these are the consequences. All of a sudden, you're in this whole new world, here you go, and you're by yourself. You're alone. And it's a shock.
Outside, Rick.
You always have a correctional officer telling you what to do and when to do it. Everywhere you go, you get strip searched. And make sure you're not bringing anything in or taking anything out where you're not supposed to take it. The lights come on at breakfast 2 o'clock in the morning and stay on because people come and go. Lights out is at 10:30. It's definitely not like sleeping at home. It's a sparse lifestyle. I probably miss the most. I miss my family, my friends, people that I've known all my life. They've always been a top priority for me. And something that I've always cared very deeply about. So that is probably the hardest thing to deal with.
Completamente diferente.
My life before was completely different from that of today's. I was independent, 100% independent. I depended on my father financially, but I could do most things on my own, almost everything.
Podía hacer muchas cosas por mí sola, ¿no? Casi todo.
I attended college, drove my car, occasionally went to parties, danced flamenco. In other words, a full agenda for a 20-year-old. What happens now is that I am a bit more afraid because I don't trust myself. Not because I'm a different Jackie internally. It's rather that externally, I can't do what I could do before.
My father is helping me to do the regular things like put on my clothes or cut the food. He cares me because my vision is not very good. Right now, I don't have a specific goal. You know, I want to finish studying English. I want, you know, to keep going with my treatment. It's very difficult because in the past, before the accident, when all the doors were open for a regular young person, and in my case, it's harder because most of the doors are closed, no?
I'm a normal person. I was a normal high school student. Anybody can come to prison, and anybody can be involved in a drinking and driving collision. It's not something that just happens to alcoholics or the trouble kids.
Something I have always dreamed about but never thought of fulfilling was to be a singer. But of course, there's no way I could be a singer now, because singing nowadays requires many physical qualities, which I regrettably no longer have.
Depression can come up real quick when you realize all the things that are going on around your family and that you're missing.
One doesn't know what's worse, if to die or be left in this condition. There are times that I wonder, why was I left like this? Why didn't I die? Why did I remain here?
Knowing what's happened, knowing the damage that I've caused to so many people and so many families, it's something that I can't describe to anybody.
The person that caused my accident. Destroyed my life completely.
And the prison sentence is nothing compared to the life sentence that I'm going to live with, knowing what I did and the consequences of what I did. The loss of life. It didn't have to happen. Period.
My name is Jacqueline Saborido. This is a picture of me before I was hit by a drunk driver. Before the car caught fire. Before two of my friends died. Before I needed more than 40 operations. This is me when my life was just like anyone else in college. This is me after being hit by a drunk driver.
The bottom line is that if you are underage, it's against the law for you to drink it all. Have you ever noticed that in America, more compassion is shown to the one who commits the crime than the one that has been violated? It's called backward judgment. Scripture says in Isaiah 59:14, "And judgment is turned away backward, and justice standeth afar off." National stats for DWI violations in 2006 alone, 1,460,000 people were caught drinking and driving. On average, every 45 minutes, someone is killed by someone that does not understand, don't drink and drive. Fast facts. Only 17% of the DWIs are charged or convicted, 11% charged and not convicted, 72% were never charged. In Cambridge, Minnesota, we have a good judge that will not tolerate drinking and driving whatsoever. If you're caught drinking and driving, you will, without question, serve a maximum sentence. This is a good judge who loves his people and his country. Guess what crime they do not have a problem with in this man's county? Those that want to take chances with other people's lives don't take them there, because this judge magnifies the law because he loves liberty. What good is law if laws are not enforced? Remember, when laws are enforced, men are afraid to commit the crime because of the judgment, and thus you end by ensuring liberty for all of them that obey the laws. This is called the establishment of righteousness. God restored liberty to a country, folks, by restoring judges that would enforce the laws of the land. America, it's the judges that need to be replaced in these particular situations. America needs to understand no, because your family's future depends upon it. Now, how many of you ever heard that alcoholism is a disease? Remember again what Charles Spurgeon rightly said, "Lower the law and you dim the light by which man perceives his own guilt." Straight from Bill Sardi, Knowledge of Health. Alcoholism is not a disease, and efforts to classify alcoholism as a disease only serve as an escape from personal responsibility. Let it be said that the designation of alcoholism came in at a popular time when therapists were attempting to gain reimbursements for treatment of this behavior. Therefore, most experts declared alcohol abuse as a disease and a self-serving manner to obtain fees for treatment. There is no scientific revelation that brought about alcoholism as a disease. What's the remedy? Our founding forefather, Dr. Benjamin Rush, his remedy for alcoholism? Total abstention. Quit. Stop. Don't do it anymore, because your life and your eternity depends upon it.
My dad has told me every day I was born. Most of the addictions, most of the problems in this nation is all the mental problems of the people. It's just them making up excuses for themselves so that they don't have to deal with responsibility.
Now, what of our colleges? Harvard. Harvard was started by the Congregationalists for training ministers of the gospel. It produced signers of the Declaration such as John Adams, John Hancock, Samuel Adams, William Ellery, William Hooper, Robert Treat Paine, William Williams, Elbridge Gerry. It produced signers of our Constitution, William Samuel Johnson, Rufus King. Other prominent leaders were Fisher Ames, a framer of the Bill of Rights, William Cushing, original U.S. Supreme Court Justice, Timothy Pickering, Revolutionary War General, Secretary of War for Presidents Washington and Adams. Harvard trained a number of our founding forefathers. What was its educational philosophy? The answer to that question is set forth in Harvard's two mottos, for Christ and the Church, for the glory of Christ. Harvard's directives to students, let every student be plainly instructed and consider well that the main end of his life and studies is to know God and Jesus, which is eternal life, John 17:3. And therefore to lay Christ in the bottom as the only foundation of all sound knowledge and learning. The directives continue. Everyone shall so exercise himself in reading the scriptures twice a day that he shall be ready to give such an account of his proficiency therein. What about Yale? Also started by Congressionalists for training ministers of the gospel. Declaration signers from Yale, Philip Livingston, Lewis Morris, Oliver Wolcott. Signers of the Constitution from Yale, Abraham Baldwin, Jared Ingersoll, William Livingston. Other prominent leaders from Yale, Noah Webster, Zephaniah Swift, author of the first American law book, James Kent, he was a leading judge, father of American jurisprudence. Yale admonishes students with, above all, have an eye to the great end of all your studies, which is to obtain the clearest conception of divine things and to lead you to a saving knowledge of God in His Son, Jesus Christ. Yale's requirements? All the scholars are to live a religious and blameless life according to the rules of God's Word, diligently reading the Holy Scriptures and constantly attending all the duties of religion. What of Princeton? Started by Presbyterians to train ministers of the gospel. It produced signers of the Declaration, Richard Stockton, Benjamin Rush. Signers of the Constitution from Princeton, Gunning Bedford, Jonathan Dayton, James Madison, William Patterson. Other prominent leaders from Princeton, Oliver Ellsworth, the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, Richard Henry Lee, General in the American Revolution, William Bradford, George Washington's Attorney General. Now of John Witherspoon. He was the president of Princeton University. He was a signer of the Declaration. What did Witherspoon require of his students? He said, every student shall attend worship in the college hall morning and evening, and shall attend public worship on the Sabbath. There shall be assigned to each class certain exercises for the religious instruction, and no student belonging to any class shall neglect them. He goes on, he is the best friend to American liberty, who is the most sincere and active in promoting true and undefiled religion, and who sets himself with the greatest firmness to bear down on profanity and immorality of every kind. Whosoever is an avowed enemy of God, I hesitate not to call him an enemy to his country. Dr. Witherspoon taught that a true friend to liberty and to America would promote religion and bear down on profanity and immorality. In 1860, 262 of the 288 college presidents were ministers of the gospel. Over one-third of faculty were ministers of the gospel. In 1890, survey of state universities conducted by James Angell, the president of the University of Vermont and University of Michigan, stated over 90% had chapel services, 50% had compulsory chapel, 25% required church attendance. Many of the earlier leaders of our country participated in the Revolution, and many of them are involved in writing educational plans, authoring textbooks, starting universities, and one of those earlier leaders was Benjamin Rush, a signer of the Declaration of Independence, and he served in three presidential administrations, Thomas Jefferson's, John Adams', and James Madison's. Dr. Rush helped found five colleges. A university professor, he authored numerous textbooks, he was one of the proposers of public schools, and the father of public schools under the Constitution. Dr. Rush stated, "The Bible should always remain the principal textbook in American education." Benjamin Rush warned what would happen if the Bible were ever removed from schools. In contemplating the political institution of the United States, I lament that if we remove the Bible from schools, we waste so much time and money in punishing crimes and take so little pains to prevent them. For this divine book, above all others, favors that equality among mankind, that respect for just laws, and those sober and fragile virtues which constitute the soul of our government.
Lincoln, Arkansas. It was a hidden agenda. Superintendent Jim Lewis said, "We didn't get what we bargained for." Accusation. Dean used inflammatory examples. A large movie screen for visual aids and appeared to be building towards an anti-government and an anti-school climax. They said, about 30 minutes into his program,
"What little I saw.
It was actually 15. Dean began to make derogatory statements of President Bush's No Child Left Behind. No! Lewis came down the aisle and called a halt. The paper said, "The history teacher, Johnny Williams, took control of the student body who began to chant and call for the group to return."
"It was good until Mr. Lewis came in."
The embodied and bewildered principal and superintendent decided to lie to the youth by stopping the assembly and saying that they were going to go through all of our slide presentation.
"Why did you have time to look through the screen?"
Which they never did.
"Let's go back to the third hour."
Bradley, that being me, proceeds to tell the staff that this is gonna backfire. And while we were outside, we could hear the students chanting, "Let him speak, let him speak." For a little over an hour, the school's population came out to us in droves, apologizing for the actions of the teachers who are always promoting free speech. But not today.
"I'm sorry, we're not videotyping this piece."
"They're supposed to freedom of speech and they're taking it away. They're supposed to freedom of speech and they're taking it away. They're supposed to freedom of speech and they're taking it away."
She's asked.
For a little over an hour, the kids kept coming back telling us their personal response as to what they saw that day. And because of their response, we decided to go into the town and to set up camp for a nighttime assembly. We got our permit, loaded in, until the gay mayor found out that we were there for the kids. He proceeded to tell us to get our expletive and get out of his town. Then they sent the dogs to the park. With the police. The superintendent bravely watches from across the street, the cops enforcing... Well, they weren't enforcing the law. Okay, they were enforcing opinion. That is because what they were doing was breaking the law, and they knew it. And for 45 minutes following us to the main interstate in the state of Arkansas. You want to talk about taking things to the extreme without knowing the facts?
What little I saw.
Now, after traveling 1,390 miles round trip, the superintendent breaks the contract and cancels both checks for his assemblies. America, I can clearly state after this experience that this school's administration cared not an iota for education. They were protecting their own hypocrisy by doing their best to hold the mask to their faces so the kids would not know who they really were. I leave you with a question rather than a statement. Did it work? Or did the kids see them for who they really were?
I think that they should have at least let you guys finish what you were saying, because they're always telling us to have open minds and be open-minded about everything and listen to what everybody has to say, but they won't let you guys finish what you have to say.
I loved it. The music was great. You know, the guitarist Renee, he was real awesome. I loved his solo. The drummer, I don't remember who it was. He was awesome too. The lyrics were cool. I couldn't understand most of it, but overall, it was really great.
Let's listen to some famous last words. They couldn't hit an elephant at this dist. Don't let it end like this. Tell them I said something. Earth recedes, heaven opens. I've been through the gates, don't call me back. If this is death, it's sweet. Dwight, Irene, I see the children's faces. Dwight and Irene were D.L. Moody's dead grandchildren. I've offended God and mankind because my work did not reach the quality it should have. Get my swan costume ready. It is very beautiful over there. See in what peace a Christian can die. I'm ready to die for my Lord, that in my blood the church may obtain liberty and peace. I have tried so hard to do right. Don't you dare ask God to help me, to her housekeeper, who had begun to pray aloud. I'm curious to see what happens in the next world to one who dies unshriven, giving his reasons for refusing to see a priest as he lay dying. I die hard, but I'm not afraid to go. The paper burns, but the words fly free. At the stake when the Torah was also burned. Ben, make sure you play Take My Hand, Precious Lord in the meeting tonight. Play it real pretty. King was shot at 6:01 p.m. April 4th, 1968. In part three of this documentary series, we're going to talk about the distinction between the newer and the older generations. The dangers of drugs and a good judge versus a bad judge. We'll take you live from the Thomas Jefferson Rotunda in Washington, D.C. We'll also talk about hypocrisy. Do as I say, but don't do as I do. Cosmo and condoms and the sexual indoctrination being thrown on the young today. I'm going to bring in Stephanie to introduce Ever Wonder Why and some old videos from Junkyard Prophet. Not to mention, you'll get to see firsthand some more bad media. So we'll see you then.
Thank you.